Vegas, Nevada, on Houdini's birthday. It's Houdini's birthday. Passed away, you know. He's dead. Houdini is dead, but this would be his birthday. And he would be, what, 100 and...
26. 1874. You're welcome to do the math.
Okay. 134, he'd be something
134,
like
that. Very good.
Yeah, pretty quick, huh? Pretty quick. I'm not going to be sounding exactly like me today, because my mouth is burned to cinders. I'll even show you, the people at home can't. The whole upper lip is all burned and white blisters. We did a big glamour photo shoot yesterday. When you're me with a big glamour photo shoot, you can't rely on looks, of course. So I have to hurt myself. Steve Martin said, if you desperately want to be in show business and have no talent, you'll become a magician, which I think is really, really very true. So I have a piece of glass embedded deep in my hand from juggling the broken bottles last night. I didn't do anything wrong. It was perfect. The juggling was perfect. But during the break, a big piece of glass went into my hand. I got most of it out, but a little bit. So the palm of my hand in a form of like a very mild stigmata. But this is one of the only days you'll be listening to this show where you go, you know, Pendulette's kind of Christ-like. I have the hole in the palm.
Blisters in your lips.
Blisters in my lips, which Christ also had.
Yeah.
Christ also had. That's one of the things. Didn't they do vinegar when he was thirsty or something?
Yeah.
Ostensibly, theoretically, according to the myth. So they wanted me to do this, wanted me to do fire eating for the billboard, right? And they have, what they do, and this is, they want to, what photographers who are doing billboard photo shoots want to do is they want to demonstrate the futility of your life, how you're just Sisyphus rolling a boulder down Las Vegas Boulevard. So what they do is they bring in the pictures they're going to take already done. They're completely done. So they have a picture of me blowing fire out of my mouth that's going to be on the billboard, and it's all laid out in the billboard format, and it says, like, Act 2, Hazardous Materials, and a picture of me and Teller, and I'm blowing fire, and the fire looks beautiful, and the picture is perfect. And now they've got to take the picture. What they've done is they've done a Photoshop composite. So I said, you know, the composites look pretty good. You know, maybe you could just, you know, do those, right? And they said, no. Once you blow it up to billboard size, you can see all the imperfections. And I go, yeah, but you're also further away from it. You know, it's not like you're going to be up on the billboard. There's that little walkway. You're not standing up there. You're like, you know, a half a mile away going 55 miles an hour. And if you're in Vegas, you're a little drunk. How bad is that composite going to look? It's not going to look. But they said, no, we have to do this. So they bring in this photographer who I think we paid $300 million. I mean, really expensive photographer. Ow! Oh! I just had some tea and poured it right across the blisters. So the photographer, who's, you know, he's such a good photographer, he has three attractive women with him that do nothing. Okay? He has one guy who just changes the back of his camera, puts new film in. And yes, he's using chemical pictures. And I go, why aren't you shooting digital like everybody else in the world? Well, I use chemical. I like that better. Okay. But of course, it's going to be made digital, right? And then I do the fire eating. I get the whole thing, boom, boom, boom. And then they go, we're going to move around some of this stuff digitally. So they're going to fake it anyway. But I stood there and I probably did, maybe 120 blasts of fire. Now, in each blast, you get burned a little bit. But that's my fault, you know, for not being good looking and wanting to be in show business. If I was a really incredibly attractive, you know, I don't consider myself to be someone that can't go out in public because I'm repulsive. When you get into show business, there's a whole different thing. I mean, the best looking guy in your high school in Hollywood is not that good looking. Not that I was the best looking guy in my high school. I think it was a guy named, was it Donahue? Who's the best looking? It doesn't matter who the best.
Phil Donahue.
Who the best looking guy in my high school was doesn't matter because I'm a heterosexual man, so I didn't notice. But I think it was a guy named Donahue.
Yeah,
I
didn't notice.
I remember him wistfully from the showers we took together. I didn't even do sports. I just went in for the showers. My mouth is burned to pieces, and we also had two people in charge of pulling wrinkles out of my suit.
Yes.
Okay. I would stand there, and they would run up, and they would reach up onto my vest and just give a little tiny tug. Okay. And they would say, cross your arms. No, no, no. Cross your arms a little away from your chest, and now, Debray, pull down all the fabric. Okay, now nestle your arms against there. Good. Now stick a torch in your mouth and burn yourself. Everything perfect. Just perfect. Boom. Fire. So this is going to sell our show, because you're going to come into town and go, oh, he eats fire. I'm going to pay $85. Like, you can't see a fire eater for free anywhere. And so I can't really, I feel a little, now when I did, we did, this is new suits. The big question that Happy Jack has is, will you be doing fire eating tonight? Yes, I will. And man, the amount it hurts is unbelievable. See, I don't do fire
tonight's
eating.
Tonight's show's worth the $85.
Yeah. Because yeah. Last night I did the fire eating. And
wow.
I don't do just fire eating like, you know, I come out dressed as like a, you know, a wizard and wah, 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 do fire eating. No, we have a whole thing where it's kind of a makeout scene with me and a showgirl. Of course, the showgirl, who is gorgeous, you know, has like this great ass, great breasts, looks beautiful, nowhere near the billboard. But we do a makeout scene, and we do a thing where we transfer a fire mouth to mouth. And last night it was great because it's supposed to be very, very sexual, you know. So I bring my lips to hers, and the fire moves across, and you could see tears in my eyes. She moves the fire, and I was like, oh, they really hurt a lot. So we got new suits too. We're now going pinstriped. The gray suits of Penn and Teller have changed. We're now pinstripes, and my shirt has little pink stripes on it. It's a very, very big deal. We got new suits about 10 years ago in New York City, and GQ was going to do a big feature on Penn and Teller get new suits. That's a slow news day. They're not killing anybody in Afghanistan for being Christian on that day. That's not the day where the woman's been locked up for 10 years by her high school janitor. No, no, no. That's not the day where a new Spike Lee movie comes out. No, that's a slow news day when Penn and Teller getting new suits is reported on. But GQ is the fashion magazine. It was a great day. And it was New York City, and it was summer. It's probably more than 10 years ago. It was summer, beautiful. We had this huge, like, penthouse view over Central Park. And we were going to have our brand new suits, which were being designed by Zenier or something, some big company. And we were going to take this fashion photography for GQ.
I like the movement you're doing as
you
say
that.
Yeah,
fashion.
They had a little dance and little catwalk moves there right in your chair.
I'm too sexy for my mic.
Too sexy for your chair.
Too sexy for my chair. So we came in there, and of course I come in looking like I look all the time. You know, I'm wearing like shorts with holes in them and a t-shirt that doesn't quite fit with food on it. You know, that's the way I look, and my hair down on my face. And we get in there, and the big cheeses at GQ, the big cheeses at Xenia, the big cheeses for our Broadway show are all there. We're in this very expensive conference room with catered food that costs a lot of money. You know, sandwiches that you can't eat, like they're focaccia. Focaccia, words like that. By the way, on the show later on, after the first break, we're going to have on Renee French, who is a fabulous author, has a new book out, and I am gonna go so Terry Gross on your ass. This is gonna be a smart interview. I'm gonna be Terry Gross to the max. It's not gonna be stupid Penn.
Okay, well, you tech guys, are you set?
You
gotta
roll
cut
off
out
the high
highs.
End. Roll off the high end. So I'm in New York City, and I'm gonna take a drink of tea.
Don't scream.
Ah! That wasn't a scream. That was like, ah! It just goes right on the lips there.
Can we just get some ice for the tea?
Can we just do another one, please? Can we just do one more shot of that? And then he would count. So I would hold the flame in my mouth. He'd go, one, two, three. One, two, three. That was the way it went for like 150 times. And he was counting. So if he had a little trouble with his camera, I'd be holding fire. He'd go, one, two, ho, ho, ho. Two, three, ow! So I'm in this conference room with the focaccia, and I've got my shorts, and there's a little pizza stain on my shirt, and we're going to get makeup and hair. So we're supposed to be there at, let's give a time, 2.
Right.
And it's 2:15, and there's no makeup and hair. Makeup and hair is late, okay? So makeup and hair are supposed to be pretty far down on the call sheet, right? Sure. I mean, they're not the big stars. Very important. I'm not saying makeup and hair aren't important, or next time I go in, I'll be looking like Ruth Buzzy. But,
they should be there earlier than you.
Okay, right. So I'm sitting there waiting for hair and makeup, and in comes, and this is like I said, years ago, in comes a, and I sometimes you have to jump to conclusions, a very gay, I mean, so gay. I mean, I can't think of anything more gay than this that isn't pornographic on its face. And I mean literally on its face. Pornographic on its face would be maybe as gay as this guy. And he's wearing little bicycle shorts, very, very tight, you know, on his little ass. And he's got the package working. And he's got like a belly shirt on, right? That's very tight, kind of bike messenger. And he is, on top of everything else, Italian. Abby Jack wants to know if he's like Richard Simmons. No, so much gayer than Richard Simmons. I mean, really to the max, okay? And he is dark-complected, okay, and really good-looking. I mean, really good-looking. And about 24 years old. And he comes in, and he really comes in with like a Marilyn Monroe walk, you know? And he says, he's got his kit, you know, his makeup kit. And he says, and I'm going to be doing an accent here. He was Italian. The accent hearing will not be Italian. But it's just so that you can get an idea of the kind of guy he is. He comes in and goes, I am here to do the makeup. And I go, oh, yes, you're right here. And so he says, where is the model? Where is the model? And now remember, this guy is 24 years old, new to New York City, come over from Italy. He's very gay, very out of the closet gay, and he is going to do makeup for a GQ shoot. This is a good day
so
for him.
It's a good day for him. It's a
very
break.
Good day for
this
him.
This is a break.
Very good day. And he is fully lubed and ready to go. He's set to go. He's all set. And he says, where is the model? And one of the big cheeses there points to me. Now, our friend, the makeup man, looks at me and makes the only logical conclusion you could make looking at me, which is, oh, this is the guy who's going to tell me where the model is. This is the guy. So he looks at me and goes, where is the model? And I go, and I kind of giggle because I realize this is ridiculous. And I go, I believe that's me. And there is dead silence in the room. And he looks at me. He looks at me like a homeless person has just vomited on his dog. You know, it's that kind of look he gives me. This pure kind of disgust and this feeling like maybe I have to touch something involved in this. You know, there's just this, like he's going to retch. And he looks at me and says, probably the greatest line ever said to me in my life. He looks me in the eye and goes, you? Shut up. You? Are the model? And it's just pure disgust. You are the model? And you picture like everybody in the room is going to be laughing their asses off, right? This is a funny moment. But no, okay? I am a Broadway star. Star of stage, screen, and television. I am a superstar. I have a billboard in Times Square. I am a star. So nobody laughs. And they grab him by the arm and they take him into the other room. And I start laughing hysterically, and I go, come on, the poor bastard, you know? It's like this guy is like, you get hired to do the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue, and you're going to go to Tahiti to be an assistant in adjusting bra straps for the swimsuit issue, and you are a heterosexual, excited guy. You show up and then go, oh, here we have Ruth Buzzy, Mom's Maybelline. You know, they have a whole list. And you go, well, where are the mothers? So they take them out of the room, and they come back in, right? And the big head of the whole shoot comes over to me and goes, oh, excuse me, Penn, that was completely uncalled for. There's no reason for that ever. That was completely rude, and we are so embarrassed, and we're so upset. We have fired him right away, and we are getting someone else in, but it's going to take them an hour and a half to get here. And I know we're on a tight schedule. I want to get this all done. And is there any way that you would consider having him come back in the room if we had to talk with him? I go, sure. Bring him back. back in. The poor bastard, man. The poor bastard. Sure, bring him back. He was excited. He was fully lubed up. He was all ready to go. And then he's going to have to paint the Mona Lisa on a Big Mac.
He's flown from Milan.
Exactly. This is, okay, we'll cut him some slack. And I'm laughing. I'm having a good time with it. So I figure, because the way human interaction works, at least in the United States of America, is this guy who's probably getting, what, $3-4 a day to do makeup for a couple hours? I mean, this is good coin. This is coin that I'd work for. And that, you know, he's young, and he's probably going to be very, very contrite. He's going to come back in sheepish, right? And also, they've taken him out in the room and bitch slapped him. And that's clearly what he was out there to be. He had, like, five captains of industry in there telling him the where and why for about the way he acted toward a big star. The big star being Penn Fraser Gillette of the comedy and magic superstar team, Penn and Teller, playing in a Broadway theater, Letterman, Saturday Night Live, Howard Stern Show. We are everywhere in New York. We are New York. God damn it! Now he's going to come back in and show some respect. And he comes in like he's walking back into the Pittsburgh Greyhound bus station at 3 a.m. on a Friday in open-toed shoes. That's the way he walks back into the room. Like he's going to be walking through human waste and sandals, okay? And he's not high. Okay, a sober person walking into a, you know, after a Grateful Dead concert or a Fish concert, walking in sandals through everything that could possibly come out of a human being, just disgusted. And he looks at me and goes, okay, I suppose I will make you up. I mean, totally unrepentant. If we had had one political figure in our history who had the kind of balls this guy has to just come back in and just go, I made my stand, that's the line in the sand. Forget about it. The income tax will never go higher than 3%. We will not have tax records on Americans. There will not be a New Deal. You will not load the Supreme Court. We will not go to war overseas when we are not threatened here. If one political figure ever had drawn the line in the sand the way this guy drew the line in the sand, he was a political prisoner. He was forced against his will to try to draw the Mona Lisa on a rotting Big Mac that was my face. And he starts dabbing in my face. And it's like from a distance, you know? It's really from a distance, like you're being ordered to dissect dog droppings in high school class. Like, is anybody's ever going to dissect that? But I mean,
they don't make paintbrushes long enough.
Yeah, exactly. And he finishes the makeup, right, on me. And he looks at me with just complete hatred and says, where is the other model? And there in the other room, hunched over McDonald's food, not eating the focaccia, but bringing his own McDonald's food, hunched over with like some special sauce on his lips, okay, and his hair matted down from sweat in New York City, and wearing like a golf shirt that does not fit him and is worn out, and little too tight shorts with JCPenney underwear showing under the bottom, and sneakers that aren't in any way Ramones fashionably worn out, but are just worn out sneakers, and one sock pulled up over, you know, over the calf, and the other sock falling down into the shoe, and the sauce dripping off his face is Teller. Penn and Teller, star of stage, screen, and television, superstar, you know, sitting there as schlubby as possible, and I go, with great relish, I go, that's him. And I just watch, because it goes to super slow motion. We're now shooting like 10,000 frames a second as this guy turns his head and goes, and all the captains of industry, with their hundreds of thousands of millions of dollars of salary, cannot stop this one strong Italian who then walks over and applies makeup to Teller's face. Right after this, I'm going Terry Gross on your ass, and I'm talking to Renee French about some real, real art, which is her new book, The Ticking, which is out now. Go to Amazon, just buy it. Just buy it. Bye. Bye-bye. FM. I almost missed that. I was sitting here reading Renee French's book, The Ticking, I was also eating little pieces of my upper lip. That are like, there's little pieces of skin coming off there, so I can kind of get a hold of a piece, and I can pull it for a while, and then I feel like it's kind of grooming.
Right.
Like, oh, I don't want to have you know, pieces of burned flesh hanging down from my upper lip. Gets too Clive Barker.
Peel that strip all the way off around your forehead, up your nose.
Yeah, I know. That's what. Then it starts to peel further. You go, oh, now it's bleeding. Good. But for those of you who eat fire, you're not going to be able to not play with the injuries afterwards, so just give up on it. I promised everybody I was going to go Terry Gross. I'm going to go all Terry Gross. You know, we were one of the – when Terry Gross was just out of Philadelphia – and wasn't really national yet. We were also in Philadelphia, and we did the Terry Gross show probably in 74 when Terry Gross was like, you know, 15, and she had really long hair and this little head in the middle of it and then all this hair. And we did her show several times back when we were the Asparagus Valley Cultural Society. And Terry Gross is a great interviewer. And she asked me what I wanted to do once and I when we were on the show, and I said I wanted to play 20 questions. So I played 20 questions with people calling in. They would call in, and they would say, is it bigger than a bread box, animal, vegetable, or mineral? And I would answer. And we went through the 20 questions, and we had, you know, I would use it every day. It's bigger than a house. It's purple, and it's in New Jersey. And no one could get it. And then she said, what was it? And I said, well, I had nothing particular in mind. I was just answering the questions as it popped into my head, which I thought was the funniest way to play 20 questions. And she was so mad at me. Terry Gross since then has had Teller on like 20 times, and I've never been on the Terry Gross show again, I think because of my 20 questions escapade. So right now I'm going to try to get Terry Gross. I'm going to try to roll off the high end of my voice and try to be very, very well-mannered and talk to my really good friend. I mean, I love Renee French, and she's got a new book out, and we got a copy. We got a copy that's dinged up. She said, I'm going to send you a dinged-up copy.
She only has two. She sent us the one that was dinged.
It's really beautiful. Really nice.
Other than the ding.
It's got on the cover, it's got a naked baby with a box on its head. But I don't want to sell this to the wrong audience. It's an art book. That was Terry Gross wouldn't say that, would she?
I don't think
so. Terry Gross wouldn't say anything like that. But to actually interview an artist and an author and an artist for this show is a really big deal for us. We've never done anything this serious. We're going to try hard. And now on the phone, author of The Ticking, which is, I suppose, available on Amazon.
Amazon.com.
Is Renee French, who's had an illustrious career. She started out with Grit Bath, which is the first thing that I saw. The Ninth Gland, Fetish. She's also done children's books under the name Rainey Dohaney. That was called Tinka and the Soap Lady. And the book, Marbles in My Underpants, which was named by me. I'm Penn Jillette with my interviewer voice, and this is Renee French. Hello, Renee. Welcome to the show. Okay, see, Terry Gross would not have that happen. Terry Gross would build up, and Renee would be there saying, hello, Penn, how are you? Good to hear from you, old chum. My upper lip is bleeding. I have a hole in my hand. I was showing all this restraint at the New York...
It's not live. This is not live. We're taping. Okay. You can do it again. Just do it again.
Hello.
Renee French, who is the author of
Can you hear me?
Book The Ticking. Okay!
Now Renee's screwing
Now Renee's screwing me! Renee, shut your goddamn mouth until I say, my good friend Renee French, how are you doing, Renee? And then you say, hello, Penn! Always nice to hear your voice! Okay, let's try it again!
Take three.
Available on... Amazon, very shortly. I don't know if it's really out yet. Beautiful book. It's nice brown. It has gold inlays. Beautiful artwork. Great quotes from everybody. Renee French, who I first met way back when she was doing Grit Bath in the comic world, and she's done The Ninth Gland and Corny's Fetish. She works under the name of Rainey Dohaney as well, and did a book called Tinka, which I'm enjoying reading to my daughter, and The Soap Lady, in a collection of her early works called Marbles in My Underpants. I actually named that. I suggested she call it Marbles in My Underpants. It's a beautiful, beautiful book, and I could not be more honored and proud to have my good friend, Renee French. How are you doing, Renee?
Well, I'm doing great, except I can hardly hear you. You sound like that's a bother.
Has Terry Gross ever started an interview with, I'm doing fine, but I can hardly hear you?
I still can't really hear you.
Can you turn me up? Can somebody turn me up so Renee can hear me? See, when Terry Gross is interviewing somebody, the person she's talking to can hear her. Hi, Renee. Is it better now?
I can hear you, but, you know, you're really loud.
Now I'm loud?
Generally, so, yeah.
Oh, I mean, but am I too loud or too soft in the phone?
No, you're soft. I mean, you were fine, and then something exploded, and then, I lost sort of half of the sound here, and then now I can barely hear you.
Welcome to Terry Gross's sound check.
Okay, well, that's all the time we have today. Thanks, Renee. We love the book. Bye.
How are you doing now, Renee? Can you hear me a little better?
I can hear you, yeah.
You can hear me, but you can't hear me any better.
I'm glad I'm not deaf.
My begging of New York to do something about this has not helped at all. You don't hear me any better than you did before.
No.
Good. Well,
am I yelling? I hope I'm not yelling.
You're not yelling at all. You sound perfect. As a matter of fact, if you were going to do this interview with Terry Gross, you could keep your side the same. And only my side would have to change. You sound wonderful.
Okay.
When does the ticking come out?
I think officially, someone told me officially it comes out tomorrow,
cool. And
then someone else said that it comes out the middle of April, and I'm getting mixed signals about it, I'm not sure, but you can order it on Amazon now. I'm not sure when it's going to be in the stores proper, so.
And that's Renee French, F-R-E-N-C-H. Of course, you're gonna change your name to Renee Freedom, right?
Yes.
The French fries freedom.
Yeah.
Until
it's not
Renee
funny
French,
anymore.
And the book is called The Ticking. How long have you been working on it, Renee?
How long did I work on the book?
Yeah.
Probably 2 years total, I guess. But I had other things in the middle I was kind of doing for kids' books.
Now, a lot of these pictures, I read the book last night and looked through it. And a lot of these pictures, or some of these pictures, you sent to me. As you were doing them. And so I have, I have a very bad, as Renee knows very well, I have a very bad visual sense. I have no visual memory at all. And I tend to, when I read any sort of graphic novel, I have to remind myself to look at the pictures. I know that you're supposed to look mostly at the pictures, but I read most of the Watchmen series and realized that after reading half of the collection, I hadn't looked at any pictures. I had just read the words. So this book is made for me because there are some panels that don't have any words at all.
Just forced you to look at them.
Forced me to look at them. And also because I've talked to you so much about the way you do art and stuff, everything I know about being able to look at pictures, I think I learned from you. So this stuff is so, it's an entirely different way of thinking for me, you know. When I think it's completely verbally, and this story, do you want to tell people what the story is? Why don't you tell them what the story is?
The story is about a little boy, who is deformed. He's born with eyes on the side of his head and kind of looks like a fish, I guess. No hair. Well, Moxie doesn't have any hair either yet, but he doesn't have any hair even when he's, you know, 8, 9 years old. And his father takes him away to raise him on an island away from ridicule and whatever else might hurt him that he experienced as a child because the father also has the same deformities but has had them fixed by plastic surgeons. So it's about the boy sort of not wanting to change his looks, and he keeps a sketchbook and looks at some really mundane things and makes pictures of them, and then of course there's a chimp in a dress, which is always really good.
Well, animals and people clothes is the backbone of comedy.
Yeah, and I think what was that?
I said animals and people clothes is the backbone of comedy. yeah, the chimp in the dress. And the chimp is adopted as a companion, as a little sister to him?
Yes.
Yeah.
You know what? I think I'm hearing I think I'm hearing noise.
People in New York are just chatting behind you.
I've got a good idea, Renee. We're going to take another break. Happy Jack is going to kick some ass in New York City. We'll try to get you sounding better.
Maybe
then
you can call me again.
We have a whole big hunk after this. We're back with Renee French and Ben Gillette trying to be Terry Gross right after this. Her new book is The Ticking, Renee French. Right back after this. This is Ben Gillette here in Las Vegas. It's not us, you know, Cadeau. It's all of New York. There's phone service problems throughout New York. And
the whole of New York has gone down.
Well, I'm not sure it's all the boroughs, but certainly all of Manhattan. I don't want to cause any panic, but that seems to be the case. Renee is either on the phone or not. Are you on the phone, Renee?
Right now she says not.
We're talking to Renee French, even though Renee French isn't talking to us.
Let's talk about her behind her back.
Let's talk about her. You know, I've known Renee now for, she'd probably be able to tell you how many years, but zillions of years. When I met her, I lived in New York. You there, Renee?
No.
Don't hold up signs that say she's on when she's not on. It's just embarrassing. I want to talk to Renee. Desperately, but I want to talk to her about...
If only there were some technology that could make that possible. I think we're going to have to get into the horse and buggy and ride off to San Francisco to talk to Renee. We'll be back in a month, folks. What else can we do? Let's talk about her book.
Let's talk about her book. The book, you read it, right?
I read it.
It's amazing because when I was a kid, you know, I read, like, Superman comics. Uh-huh. And then I went... I read some of the underground comics, I guess you could say, in the 70s and so on. But this is one of those cases where changing the name comic to graphic novel actually means something.
Sure,
I mean, changing Seventh Avenue to Avenue of the Americas means nothing. You know? But this case, are you there, Renee?
She's not, no.
No.
She says no one's calling her. She's sitting at home waiting for someone to call. So
No one's even trying to call her. Well, you know, we could, instead of pretending to have Renee on the phone and talking about The Ticking, we could just do this again on Monday and actually have our technology all in
possibly.
Place. In the meantime, I just want to say that I want to know the difference between fine art and graphic novels, because I went and saw an art gallery show of Renee's, where there were some pictures up on the wall. You there finally, Renee?
I am. It's quiet.
Nice. Hi, Renee.
Renee,
that was easy.
I'm so annoyed.
Don't complain about the way my voice sounds, or they'll hang up on your ass and we'll never see you again. You understand that?
I do, sir.
They have control. Renee, I was just saying that, you know, I read comic books when I was a kid and didn't get them at all. And now there's a new name, which is a graphic novel. And I was just saying that name seems to be deserved. It really is a different thing. But what do you see as the difference between comic books and graphic novels?
The spine.
Wow, that's a lot easier than I thought it'd be.
I don't think there's a difference except for the format. Actually, they're longer. You can't fold them up and put them in your pocket.
I don't know, because you don't have talk balloons, right? You know,
I don't have talk balloons,
but some graphic novels do.
Yes. I mean, I actually this book I would say is probably not. You wouldn't pick it up and say this is a graphic novel. I don't know. That term is really, it's a new thing that they came up with so they could talk about these books that went on shelves that had a spine where you could read the name of the book, you know, looking at the spine. Uh-huh. Instead of saddle stitched with staples and uh-huh. I think that's the only difference between the two.
But there is a quality of, I have to think that each one of your panels must take a lot longer than each panel in a comic book.
You're so dangerous.
What do you mean?
I don't want to get in trouble. Thing is that...
I mean, there's a kind of care. There's a feeling with comic books that they are meant to be, even though, you know, the Superman original ones sell for tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars. They're meant to be ephemeral, right?
Yes. Originally,
once.
The superhero comics, you know, you buy a comic book, you read it, and you pass it on to your little friends, and then when the next one comes out, you buy the next one, and it goes like that. And yeah, except for some people, we know a lot of people, actually, we know personally people mm-hmm. who collect comic books in
right,
sleeves.
Right, but that's the collecting of ephemera. You know, that is,
yeah.
That's an actual different thing. But I've opened your book, and I really did do this. Most people say they do stuff like this. They don't really. I've opened to a random page, and it happens to be the page where Edison Steelhead is walking into his bedroom, and he has he's holding one of the heads that he wears to go out in public, which is like this monkey head.
Yeah.
He's holding his hand, and there's his bedspread and a stuffed toy. And on the shelf, there's a couple of other heads that he might wear, a fish and a pig. And I open to this, and I don't think if you, even somebody who doesn't have the visual sense, lacks visual senses like I do, you can look at this picture outside of the story. You can look at this picture for a way long time. I mean, even the way, and you taught me about all this, you know, even the way the light bulb in the background changes the lighting in the back there, the pictures on the wall that talk about his relationship with his father, just for the fact that they're on the wall, what stuffed toy a kid who's this deformed would use, and also the strangeness and the beauty. It is a clearly beautiful visual image, and also has this deep strangeness of a young deformed kid holding a head in his hand, a fake head, a mask, and all of that is in one frame of what, a 300-page book?
Yeah, it's over 200.
That I just happened to open up. I don't think you were supposed to get that out of a comic book, were you?
Well, I'm not considering. When I made this book, I actually, my editor was a little bit, I think, he was a little worried that it wasn't accessible enough, that people might not know how to read it, that it was, maybe the pacing was so different from comic books that it was gonna be tough for comic book readers.
It's really tough.
I don't mean to be whiny here, but can you tell the guys in the booth to shut up?
No, there's no chance of that.
Because I can hear every word they're saying, and they were in the middle of what you were saying. They were just, you know,
they're
talking
just
about
on.
I don't
yeah,
know
they,
what. Like
they don't hear us. They can't hear us.
They don't
it's
hear
ghosts.
Us. They don't know we exist. They're absolutely
it's like
ghosts.
It's the sixth.
So
sense.
I think I got the gist of what you were saying, and I like detail, and detail's really important in this book. And the reason I put the words on the underneath the panel is because I don't want the words mucking up the picture. I kind of want it to feel more like a film, where you're watching the film and the words are spoken, as opposed to in most comic books where the word balloon actually takes up part of the air, you know, part of the space in the panel. I think if you, I think it's really I'm really proud of you for being so observant with that panel, Penn. Because
it's not my style to be able to do that, but you've made this. I really think that what art is supposed to be is a glimpse into another human being's heart.
Yeah, I agree.
And with you and I, who've known each other for so many years, it is probably of all my friends, it is the most like a fish talking to a buffalo. You know? We don't seem to think alike at all, and the fact that we are so close and understand each other so well is just a tribute to human beings' desire to know one another, because this is a book that I would open up at a store 10 years ago, 15 years ago, and would not even understand why it existed, you know? And now I go through it, and I really do learn more about someone that I know and love very well by looking at a piece of art. And I don't think, you know, I want to say to anybody buying this that I am way out on the chart for being able to understand comic books. I get lost in Superman comics, you know. It's a difficult form for me. And this, what I mostly, this teaches me is a kind of thing about pace that I can really really luxuriate over every page of this and really think about it. And I always worry about your stuff. Because whenever your stuff is described, people, because it's easier to talk about, go toward the strangeness, you know,
yeah.
And there is a deep strangeness, but yet that strangeness goes away after page three or four, and it gets taken over by beauty. And
yeah,
I think there's no stronger philosophical statement than you can have about life than to find an artwork that takes stuff as strange and as out as it can possibly be, and then through beauty and nothing else but beauty brings it in so that we are relating to stuff that we have nothing in common with.
Thanks, Pen.
You know, and I want to point out that, you know, you and I are nuts, and we know Renee, and so we're friends with her, and my mom read this and is astonished and stunned and cannot believe how wonderful it is.
Uh-huh.
She's nuts for it. She's nuts for it. She's like bought all of the copies that are available and is giving them to friends as gifts because she's astonished. And that's different from us weirdos liking it.
You know, I buy books. You know, I read Moby Dick every year. And books mean nothing to me. I throw them away. I know this is a horrible thing to say. I throw them away and buy new ones. If I read a book and like it, I throw it away or give it away, and then I buy another copy when I'm interested in looking into it. I don't try to keep a library. Nothing to do with that. And when I buy Moby Dick, I rip off the first third of the book, throw the rest away, read that much, then buy another paperback, take the next. And yet, when I touch one of Renee's books, my entire sensibility about books changes. You know, I know this is one of the rare copies right now, but it certainly won't be in a week. They'll be all over the place. And yet, you know, I have my table here with the tea on it. I'm keeping it away from the tea. I'm making sure my hands are wiped off before I touch it. There's a kind of thing that I am really not materialistic in the sense that things matter to me. And yet this book really seems important. I mean, you open it up to any page and you feel like you have something that is not ephemeral, something that you'd want to be looking at in 100 years or in 200 years. And that's why it's so odd that at first blush you could consider this a comic book. Because to me, this means more as an object than a book should. It's really beautifully done. Are you happy with the way it came out?
This particular book is, I think, the first book I've ever had where it came out the way I wanted it to come out in terms of printing quality and stuff like that. I always have trouble with the printers matching the artwork. You know, it's either too light or too dark. And the cover came out, which is cloth bound with gold filigree on the cover and everything. Uh-huh. And so Jordan Crane, who was the designer on it with me, we wanted it to feel like an object, and at the same time, we didn't want it to be something that you'd be afraid to pick up, you know, something that you wouldn't want to dive into. I want you to be in the world when you're in there.
You're 100% successful.
That's great.
It really does have all those feelings. Talk about the title, The Ticking, because it'll help keep it in people's minds as they go to Amazon.
The Ticking, yeah. Well, it's actually about you know, the ticking, the pattern on the mattress.
Yeah, that's
pull that. Up, right? Or the ticking on the pillow
right.
underneath the case.
Oh, yeah.
That sort of minutia, you know, the the little details of life that you don't normally notice. It's something that Edison Steelhead would notice. His world is very small because of where he's brought up on this little island, and he notices things like that. So it's kind of about that, the little things in life and how those things can be beautiful.
It sure is. That's The Ticking by Renee French. Sorry it took so long technically to get you on the phone, Renee.
I'm blaming it on New York.
This book is great. Thank you so much, Renee. Maybe we'll talk again about this. There's so much more to say. Thanks a lot. This is Ben Gillette, Michael Goodell, Las Vegas. Bye.